Good morning, Ambassador Ellen Margaret Loy. Welcome to IPI, and thank you very much for making the time for this interview. I'm Arthur Boutelis, and I'm joined by my colleague Vanessa Wyatt from the International Peace Institute. So I'd like to start off the interview by asking you, what do you think are the main achievements of the UN mission in Liberia? It was first mandated in 2003, so the question is about over the last 9 years, but maybe more specifically since you took the leadership of the mission in October 2007.
Good morning, and thank you very much. Well, in short, I would say the main achievement of the mission in Liberia through the 9 years have been that we have been able to keep the peace in Liberia. In beginning of the mission, we were actively involved in disarmament and collecting the weapons that had been used and were still on the ground and enforcing the peace. But as time went by, our role has been to keep the peace, to be vigilant for threats to the peace, to act when incidents occur that could threaten the peace. And then I think our mere presence have been a deterrent for any who wanted to destroy the peace. While keeping the peace, we have also been actively involved with the Liberian government and all the national actors in building the peace, especially in building the national security agencies. And United States, in the peace agreement, took the responsibility to train the new armed forces of Liberia, while the peacekeeping mission focused on building the Liberian police, training the police officers, showing them how to do police work, and showing them and teaching them how to build a viable police force that could protect the citizens from atrocities. I think I cannot underline strongly enough the importance of peacekeeping and peace building going hand in hand. They're two sides of the same coin. If we don't urgently work on building the peace while we keep the peace, then we will not achieve our ultimate goal, namely sustainable peace and prosperity.
Last year, in 2011, the Côte d'Ivoire post-election crisis put additional pressure on UNMIL at a time when Liberia itself was preparing for national elections. How were you able to deal with it? And what were maybe your biggest concerns in the run-up to the Liberia elections? And how well do you think the UN mission performed?
The Côte d'Ivoire crisis put two challenges on Liberia and thereby the United Nations in Liberia. The first one being to deal with and cater for the many refugees that sought refuge in Liberia. But that, of course, was a role primarily with UNHCR and other agencies in the lead. But the mission tried to support them in getting the camps established quickly and getting the supplies out in the country that was needed for the refugees. On the security side, we had another challenge, namely that many former combatants, be it Liberian or Ivorians, crossed the border, and they had to be monitored closely as to what their intentions were. And unfortunately, they also brought weapons with them or hid their weapons around the border. And the border between Ivory Coast and Liberia is very remote, very dense rainforest, so very difficult to monitor and patrol. So we had a very intense cooperation with the Liberian security agencies, be it the police or the immigration, to try and monitor and try and find out from the villages and local chiefs and so on, what they have heard and what was going on, in order to be able to act before the peace in Liberia was threatened or before the peace in Cote d'Ivoire was threatened by some of these ex-combatants. We, of course, also monitored closely whether they had any intention in meddling in the Liberian elections. And luckily, they did not do so, but we were on our toes and tried to monitor as best as we could to avoid any disturbances. As for the elections itself, we had three elements in the mandate from the Security Council. One was to coordinate international assistance. The second was to provide logistical support to the Liberian election authorities. And the third, to use our good offices in creating an atmosphere conducive for free, fair, and conflict-free elections. And I think we performed fairly well on all of them, but I'm not the one to be the judge of the mission's performance during that phase. I'm sure some auditors will look closer into it.
You finished your term as SRIG last month. ASG Edmond Mullet has led a technical assessment mission recently, and the UN mission is preparing to reconfigure its presence in Liberia with a possible drawdown. What do you think are the main challenges that lie ahead in transferring responsibility for internal security to national Liberian authorities, and what is your assessment of their capacities?
Well, the main challenge is definitely to continue our effort to build the national security agencies, because it's very clear they are not able to function and perform those tasks on their own today. Progress has been made, but we have not reached the goal yet. So while the mission is being reconfigured, it's very important that in doing so, account is taken of the need for the mission also be able to react quickly to disturbances around the country if it might occur. And at the same time, to continue, especially working with building the police force and maybe the immigration force along the borders to equip them and make them better capable of performing on their own. I also believe that it will be crucial that the borders of Liberia are closely monitored, first and foremost the border with Ivory Coast, but also the border with Guinea.
Ambassador, I'd like to turn our focus to peace building. As Denmark's ambassador to the UN, you played a key role in the birth of the UN Peacebuilding Commission in 2005 and 2006. As SRSG, you've experienced the PBC's work firsthand when Liberia came onto its agenda in September of 2010. What is your assessment of the PBC's role in supporting peacebuilding in Liberia? And what do you see as the PBC's strengths and weaknesses, and what advice might you have for the PBC going forward in Liberia?
Well, let me first say that in hindsight, it might have been better, both for Liberia and the PBC, if Liberia had been on the agenda of the PBC back when PBC was established, because that was the time when the Liberian authorities, in cooperation with their international partners, started to do the planning of their priorities for the future, the planning of their development activities. And I think if PBC had been in at that time, I think it would have been much better. But for various reasons, that was not the case. So we waited, it wasn't until 2011 that PBC took Liberia on its agenda. I think it's still important, but I think it's important for PBC to realize that a lot of planning and priority setting has taken place in Liberia in the years since the war, and it's important that they abide by those priorities, and they work within that national framework and continue to develop. I have said in our fora, and I have nothing against repeating it, you have to be very careful not to make PBC a too New York-focused exercise. The driving force for the PBC is and should be what's happening on the ground and the national priorities on the ground. And it was actually also the intention when the PBC was set up. In those days, we were not saying it should only take place in New York and only be discussed in New York. And it's especially important when you come to defining priorities, because priorities for peace building cannot be set in meeting room two without a very, very close knowledge of what's happening on the ground, what activities is already underway, and how to adjust it. Secondly, I feel a little bit that PBC has forgotten that they were not supposed to be a development actor and cover the whole agenda. They were supposed exactly to focus on crucial peace-building activities right after a conflict. And I think the definition that doesn't exist of peace-building ever so often is being used as encompassing everything, which I don't think so. That was not the intention. I think peace building is those crucial activities that are necessary to bring long-term development forward. And I think that focus is needed, and the country focus is needed. And I think we need involvement, closer involvement, both on the UN side, but certainly also of the members, member state side, closer involvement of the actors on the ground. I think the link, and I have been one myself, between the UN diplomats and their colleagues on the ground, either UN or member states, needs to be much tighter for the PBC to succeed in a country like Liberia, but in any country on the PBC agenda.
As a leader within the G7 plus group of fragile states, Liberia played a very important role in shaping the New Deal for Engagement in Fragile States that was endorsed at Busan last December. And Liberia has put itself forward as one of the pilot countries for implementation of the New Deal. What, in your opinion, would need to change on the ground to put some of these commitments into practice in Liberia? And do you think the government, the donors, and the UN are prepared to make these changes?
Well, my answer would probably be something like that remains to be seen. I've been in this work for many years, and we have had many declarations, the Paris Declaration, the Accra Declaration, and so on aid effectiveness. And, well, we can always discuss the success rate in terms of implementation. I think the Busan Declaration, the New Deal, has a lot of very relevant and pertinent elements, but it's very important that both the bilateral and the multilateral donors, as well as the fragile states governments, stick to those priorities. And I ever so often in the field, I see partners wanting to go it on their own, and I still hope and still urge everybody to work together to ensure sustainability, because it's really not only in the fragile state's interest, that is without doubt, it's very complicated for them with lack of capacity to deal with so many international partners who have their own rules and regulation and priorities and whatever to be implemented. It's a lot of overutilization of an already scarce capacity that should be used to focus on the challenges in the country. But I cannot understand that partners do not understand that only that way will ensure sustainability of their interventions. So my answer is Busan is to be welcome. It's definitely a step in the right direction, but the implementation by all actors is a crucial challenge, and that we don't know yet, but we'll have to monitor very closely.
Ambassador, thank you very much for speaking with the Global Observatory today.
You're very welcome.